prison is not meant to be a jolly good time. Its sole purpose is to separate good from evil, to contain and secure those who have violated public trust and broken the law. And if all are lucky, the system may rehabilitate those prisoners and return them to society better than they were before arriving to prison. But where do we draw the line? How much punishment is necessary? What is excessive? How many rights should inmates have? What defines cruel and unusual punishment? Most importantly, what is inhumane? Courts have consistently ruled that inmates have a basic human right to food, water, medical care, and protection. They have also ruled that the same constitutionally protected right of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness applies to those behind bars within reason, of course, just as it does to those who are not imprisoned. But then you have Alabama, a state that already has to defend its way of life based upon their slow, drawn-out southern drawl, the painful history of slavery and Jim Crow, and despite modern civil rights, Alabama ranks high on the list of options of what racial inequality looks like. So it would be no surprise for many if I told you that Alabama's prison system is crumbling. It's dangerous, it's overcrowded, it's mismanaged, and it probably should have already been placed under federal oversight. I'm not a convict hugger by any means. I make money off of telling the stories of their crimes. But I am human. If something is wrong, then I speak up, just as I would sing praises for that which is good. But right this minute in Alabama, there are dozens of state prisons with 20,000 plus inmates that are in chaos. Living conditions so bad that most would cringe if forced to reside in it. It's one thing to do the time for the crime, but it's another for the state to allow such conditions to exist. This is the story of chaos and mayhem, of life behind bars in the state of Alabama.
Recorded in Rocket City, USA. No bullshit. Just real talk. And now Deuce Conrad.
In 2022, a total of 266 people died while incarcerated in Alabama prisons. It was the highest death count in the state in more than 20 years and among the highest inmate mortality rates in the country, at 5 times greater than the national average. Cindy Hamilton testified before the Alabama Prison Oversight Committee in early December. She told the committee that her son has been mentally and physically tortured for 4 years, and in January of that year, corrupt officers were given the authority to punish and to take away good time, she said. Ms. Hamilton claims her son has no violent charges and he was going to be released in April, which is just 4 months away. All of his good time was taken. Because of that, the state says he will not be released until February of 2035. Hamilton said that due to her son being written up for assault, which she said was merely an instance of him defending himself from an attacker, the Alabama Department of Corrections revoked nearly all of his accrued early release time, and under the new formula for early release time, had his prison stay extended by more than 10 years. Hamilton said what the state is allowing to happen is animalistic. And this is my son, and it's not just him. Where's the rehabilitation? It needs to be fixed right now, today, like right now, yesterday. Killing them, they're torturing them. It's not okay. Hamilton's story is one of many stories told by loved ones of the incarcerated and former inmates. Incarcerated individuals in Alabama Department of Corrections facilities are being left without adequate access to ice and have been exposed to raw sewage, according to several sources. In July of 2023, the Fountain Correctional Facility and the Staten facility were both named as prisons that are either lacking functioning ICE machines or just not providing enough to the population. The Department of Corrections responded that the ADOC is committed to providing adequate resources for its inmate population, especially during periods of extreme heat and cold. However, sources enduring the conditions say that is false. Alabama is one of at least a dozen states that lacks universal air conditioning in all of its prisons, and this has dangerous implications not only for the summer, but also for the winter months because of the cold temperatures. Now, the sewage exposure has only been reported at a fountain, but was documented on TikTok as early as June 26 of 2023. Now, one individual previously was diagnosed with meningitis, but it's unsure of the cause. According to a report on E. coli survivability, it is likely that someone can catch meningitis if exposed to none other than wastewater. Now, collectively, these findings suggest that E. coli strains that may cause septicemia and meningitis are surviving wastewater treatment and may be transmissible through wastewater effluents. Goes without saying, it's been a deadly year in the Alabama Department of Corrections. But more so specifically, at Donaldson Correctional Facility in Bessemer. It's there that dozens of inmates have died, both naturally and through other means. Now, just within 2023, in the last days, inmates have died by strange, yet often declared natural causes and or murder. It is very difficult to get a real sense of what life is like in an Alabama prison because the media is rarely allowed access. And so we depend on recently released inmates and sometimes current inmates to show us the reality. Demario Massey is slowly reacclimating himself to life outside of prison. He spent 15 years behind bars, much of that at the Donaldson Correctional Facility. He said he witnessed firsthand at the overcrowded conditions that contribute to violence. Now, Massey says it's supposed to be one-man rooms, but they have two beds in there. You may have three people in them, two on beds and one on the floor. Massey was released in February of last year, but Bernard Jemison is still locked up, and he's gained his fame for his TikTok videos as he documents prison life and uses a contraband cell phone to shed light on the conditions. Inmates are dying almost every other day in Alabama, whether it be homicide, whether it be overdose or suicide, Jemison said. Inmates wake up in here almost every morning in a hopeless environment. They feel like the parole board is not letting anybody go. Both men talked about their hopelessness behind bars, saying many, including Massey, give in to drugs during their prison time. They don't care. The nurses, the officers, they don't care, Massey said. They really just don't care. Jemison says he doesn't feel conflicted about using a contraband cell phone to expose what's happening in Alabama prisons because he himself is working to help people. And most importantly, he wants to save lives.
Listening to true crime podcasts can make you question your safety and security. And what better way to protect yourself than with a safe room? And why stop there? Make your entire house a safe space from serial killers and zombies and tornadoes and hurricanes. You see, insulated concrete form homes built with Nadura not only offer great curb appeal, but are comfortable and strong and safe year-round. ICF foam block construction offers superior energy efficiency, occupant comfort, sound dampering, fire resistance and disaster resilience for the life of your home. And for those of you in North Alabama, North Mississippi, and Southern Tennessee, it is simple as emailing our good friend Carlos at BC3 ICF Distributor, LLC. Located in Phil Campbell, Alabama, Carlos has everything you need to build a fortified home at a fraction of the cost of a traditional build. For more information about how Nadura ICF can provide you safety and security, email bc3.naduraicfdistributor@yahoo.com.
There is no doubt Alabama's prisons are plagued by abuse, violence, and corruption at the hands of correctional officers, and that's according to an ADOC officer. Now, conditions in the Central Alabama Men's Prison where he works are so filthy and dangerous, he told 1819 News that he wouldn't even wish prison on his worst enemy. In that interview with 1819 News, the officer described rampant corruption among officers and supervisors, unchecked abuse and neglect of the people in their care, along with dangerous, disgusting conditions that fuel high turnover among prison staff. He said 90% of officers and supervisors are dirty. The officer whose name was withheld for his protection told 1819 News that most contraband, including drugs, weapons, and cell phones, come in with prison staff who are not consistently screened when they enter the prison. It's coming in by officers on a regular basis, he said, because normally when they come in, they don't get shook down properly. They bring it in bags of food, stuff it in like a bag of watermelon wrapped up and stuff like that. Corruption extends to the supervisors who fail to enforce proper procedures and allow contraband to circulate, according to the officer. I've seen inmates walk up to supervisors and say, "Hey, let me get my phone back." And I've seen that supervisor give it right back to them. So what you're saying to me is I have to bust my ass to get it, but you're just going to turn around and give it back to them. That's not the only issue plaguing Alabama's prison system. Overdoses are rampant, and the officer reports they're often fatal. That's 16 hours a day. That's every day, the officer said. If you're lucky, they'll survive. But in the last 2 months, we've probably had around 30 people die from overdosing. And yet supervisors still refuse to intervene, the officer said. Even though understaffing means incarcerated people rarely try to hide drug use, I've caught them shooting up several times, the officer told 1819 News. I'll take it to the supervisor and they don't want to reprimand them for it, so I go about it my way. And I do it the old-fashioned way. He said, I slap the shit out of them and then I take their stuff and I throw it out. The officer was blunt, even casual, about using violence against incarcerated people. On a regular daily basis, the inmates go about their normal day. They check out for trade school, and then we open it up. They go walk around, play basketball, catch the snack line store, whatever. All the while we stay in the dorms, he said. Every now and then, we smack one or two around if we have to. Normally, that's what we do on a daily basis. Violence, including rape, goes unchecked by correctional officers charged with protecting the people in their care. On an average day, the officer said, we have to take one to the hospital because they got stabbed or beat up real bad or got their head swelled up. That, he said, counts as a good day. Sometimes we have to take one to the center that has to do with PREA. That's the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act. And that's if an inmate gets raped, the officer said. Rape has been happening a lot lately, he said. It's like every 2 to 3 days. Every third day or once a week, you'll get one saying, I've been raped, or you'll get one that says, I've been raped, but I'm not going to say nothing. Because they don't want to go to the PREA officer. Because they fear retaliation. The violence experienced by incarcerated people, as well as the nasty roach-infested living conditions they're forced to endure, fuels understaffing in the state's prisons, the officer explained. Many new officers leave after witnessing prison conditions for themselves. The officer said, this is the real deal. I've seen people getting stabbed, beat up, busted in the head with broomsticks, and I've seen it all.
I've seen people cut ear to ear. I've seen wrists getting slit. I've had inmates die in my arms. That'll mess somebody up. And because incarcerated people are not given proper cleaning supplies, the officer said the dorms where they sleep are so unsanitary that they are literally sickening. A lot of us officers get sick. Some of us get sick quicker than others. The inmates are getting sick all the time. I'm sure there's mold in there somewhere. The showers are nasty. You've got roaches everywhere. It's bad. The officer's graphic description of conditions in Alabama prisons today mirrors the unconstitutional conditions federal investigators found throughout the state's prisons for men 4 years ago. At that time, federal prosecutors identified corruption, understaffing, and inadequate supervision as factors contributing to officers' frequent use of excessive force against people in Alabama's prisons. Without correctional supervisors who demand adherence to use of force policies, training, and law, federal prosecutors reported correctional officers are far more likely to act with impunity. And while the Justice Department has called out underreporting and misrepresentations in data from the Alabama Department of Corrections, ADOC's own reports reveal that its failure to protect incarcerated people from rampant violence and sexual abuse continues unabated. And that only comes with devastating consequences for Alabamians.
If you're like me and you're wanting to lose weight or control diabetes, a low-carb diet or a ketogenic diet may be what you need. And that can seem overwhelming at first, but WholesomeYum.com has organized groups of over 230 low-carb foods, including veggies, proteins, dairy, seasonings, condiments, fruit, and more, so that you know exactly what you can and cannot eat on keto. Go to DeuceConradShow.com, click on promotions, and there's a link for you to get all sorts of free ebooks, recipes, and basically any information that you could ever want about the keto diet. Or you can simply click the link in the bio for more information.
A lawsuit has been filed against the Alabama Department of Corrections alleging an officer encouraged prisoners to murder an activist currently incarcerated at the Limestone Correctional Facility in Harvest, Alabama. The complaint alleges a lieutenant correctional officer encouraged other prisoners to murder Robert Earl Council, a lead organizer in the 2022 Alabama prison strikes. "Even if y'all killed him, I'll make sure nothing happens to y'all," Jeremy Pelzer told Crips gang members at Limestone Prison in June, according to the suit. "I want Robert Council. I'm tired of the bastard and all his lawsuits," Pelzer originally told another prisoner in 2019. "Council is at a substantial risk of being assaulted or murdered by Lieutenant Jeremy Pelzer, another Limestone Correctional Facility officers or inmates who act at their behest and who have constant access to the solitary confinement cell where plaintiff counsel is housed in Limestone, according to the suit filed in Alabama in November of 2023. An evidentiary hearing was held on the same month on November the 30th. Now, the lawsuit seeks preliminary relief from the retaliation counsel is alleging and to transfer him to a different prison for his safety and out of long-term solitary confinement. He has been in solitary confinement since the 15th of October. Limestone, a maximum security facility, is the largest prison in the Alabama state system with a capacity of 2,086 prisoners. The Limestone has had a decade-long and ongoing pattern and practice of imposing solitary confinement without due process, the lawsuit alleges. As an example, the lawsuit cites that 2.5-year-long solitary confinement of prisoner Juan Caples from January 21st to October of 2023. The purpose of filing the lawsuit is to draw attention to the ADOC's direct targeting of organizers who are working inside the ADOC. It's to highlight and bring a stop to direct targeting of inside organizers, says Andrew Menifee, a civil rights attorney representing counsel. Organizers who are working on the inside to bring attention to ADOC's corruption should be granted whistleblower protection to prevent the dehumanization and murder of those who come forth to speak out. Now, counsel has been in prison at Limestone since 2019, where the lawsuit notes he has filed or assisted in filing numerous lawsuits and grievances about abuses within the Alabama Department of Corrections and retaliation he and other prisoners have experienced for speaking out against the rampant issues within Alabama's prisons. The lawsuit also alleges correctional officers routinely use fabricated disciplinary hearings to cover up abuses, and includes testimony from two other people incarcerated there who echoes allegations of excessive force. Now, counsel, who goes by the moniker Kinetic Justice, has for years led hunger strikes and peaceful actions against solitary confinement, retaliation, and abuse within Alabama's prisons. The lawsuit cites numerous allegations of retaliation and assault, including an incident in January of 2021 where beatings by four correctional officers led counsel to lose consciousness and cause permanent blindness in his left eye. It also states that the ADOC's Internal Review Board had recommended counsel be transferred from Limestone for his own safety. But that recommendation was never fulfilled. So in October of 2023, the lawsuit alleges counsel was pepper sprayed and placed in solitary confinement based on a charge by correctional officers that he violated social media use policy within prisons. But the lawsuit claims the charges were known to be fabricated, as the cited evidence was a 3-year-old video at a different prison. If prior practice is any indication, ADOC will soon move to reclassify plaintiff counsel into closed custody, placing him in solitary confinement for 6 to 18 months, alleged the lawsuit. The lawsuit cited several other threats from correctional officers towards counsel that included or alluded to his assault and even murder.
Do you have a beard? It's a legitimate question. You know, a beard says a lot about a man. A beard can define a man just by looking at him. Screw what they say. You can judge a book by its cover, and a beard is one hell of a cover. But let me ask you this, how do you take care of your beard? Are you putting chemicals into your face that will basically eat the hide off of a zombie? Stop that shit. Be a badass and start using Badass Beard Care. Look, it's all natural. It's made by badass vets, and it will make your beard so incredibly soft, so incredibly manly. And you can get a free trial set today by going to deuceconrad.com and selecting Own Promotions.
Former Alabama Department of Corrections Lieutenant Mohammed Shahid Jenkins, age 52, was sentenced in December to 87 months in prison, followed by 3 years of supervised release, for using excessive force on an inmate and lying afterwards in an official report in an attempt to cover up his abuse. He previously pled guilty to these offenses on September the 12th. Now, according to court documents and evidence introduced at sentencing, Jenkins, former William E. Donaldson Correctional Facility Lieutenant and Shift Commander, who had more than 20 years of experience in law enforcement, used excessive force on an inmate listed as VR, specifically on February the 16th, 2022. Jenkins willfully deprived inmate VR of his right to be free from excessive force by kicking him, hitting him, and spraying him with chemical spray, and then striking him with a can of chemical spray, and then also striking him with a shoe while VR was restrained inside of a holding cell.
and not posing a threat. Over the course of approximately 5 minutes and outside the presence of other officers and inmates, Jenkins repeatedly re-entered the holding cell that VR was in and re-assaulted him numerous times. Jenkins used a dangerous weapon, chemical spray, and the can of chemical spray on VR, and his attacks on VR caused VR to suffer bodily injury. Following his assault on VR, Jenkins authored a false incident report, and later, Jenkins lied to investigators by denying using any force on VR. Now, as a part of this plea agreement, Jenkins also admitted that he had used unlawful force on another inmate on a separate occasion at Donaldson. Specifically, on November 29, 2021, Jenkins willfully deprived inmate DH of his right to be free from excessive force by repeatedly spraying DH with chemical spray while DH was handcuffed behind his back and compliant. And then he hit DH in the head with a can of chemical spray, and by delivering an open hand strike to DH's head while he was suffering from the effects of the chemical spray. In another court case, a family has filed a lawsuit against ADOC for an unspeakable act. The family says 43-year-old Brandon Dotson was found dead in mid-November in the Ventris Correctional Facility in Barber County. And according to court documents, the day he died, it was the same day he was to be considered for parole after serving some 19 years on a burglary conviction and parole violation out of Lawrence County. But here's where it gets strange. The family says that when Dotson's body was returned to them for burial, his heart was missing. They are now suing the Alabama Department of Correction and several officials. The lawsuit alleges wrongful death based on prison officials failing to protect Dotson, ignoring his medical needs, and then mishandling a corpse. The lawsuit says Dotson's body was not released to the family until 5 days after his death, when the family conducted its own independent autopsy, where it was discovered that Dotson's body was missing his heart. Now, the family suit claims Dotson was either the target of violence or had access to drugs in the facility. The lawsuit states that the Alabama Department of Corrections was severely overcrowded and inmates weren't supervised. But the bigger question is, where in the hell did inmate Dotson's heart go? Is the Alabama Department of Corrections trying to hide a murder? Are they trying to cover up a death at their own hands? Or, God forbid, are they selling inmates' organs on the black market? There are so many questions left to be answered.
Are you looking for unbiased news in a world of biased media? Look no further. 1440 provides an impartial view of what's happening in the world so our readers can form their own conclusions. 1440 scours hundreds of sources each and every day to bring you a single morning briefing thoughtfully curated by experts, straight to your email with no haggling or unnecessary spam. Get even more benefits by signing up through the Deuce Conrad Show affiliate link. Visit www.deuceconradshow.com and select promotions to sign up today.
It is no doubt that the Alabama Department of Correction has played with corruption. But it goes even further in state government. The Alabama Personnel Board has reinstated a correctional officer who was dismissed on his own warden's recommendation because he used excessive force against an incarcerated man who, get this, died from the blunt force trauma of said assault. Captain Timothy McCorvey was a senior supervisor at Ventris Correctional Facility in Southeast Alabama, on January 21st, 2023, when he struck Brandon Crosby. Surveillance video showed Captain McCorvey entering E dormitory at approximately 2:21 a.m. and dragging Mr. Crosby by his shirt collar into the hallway outside the door. And then, according to the administrative law judge who reviewed the video for the board, Captain McCorvey leaned down and said something to Mr. Crosby and then punched him before securing Mr. Crosby in handcuffs. And once he was handcuffed and on the ground, Mr. Crosby grabbed Captain McCorvey's leg and raised his head slightly. At this point, the Alabama law judge found, it appears that McCorvey hit Crosby a second time in the video. Crosby's head snapped forward to the floor. After McCorvey made a sudden movement towards Crosby, Crosby rolled over onto his side and appeared in distress until the end of the video. Crosby, age 36, died at the hospital later that day from blunt force trauma. And according to an autopsy that showed extensive hemorrhaging around his brain as well as multiple rib fractures, liver and spleen lacerations, and deep bruising through Mr. Crosby's neck. Now, an internal investigation by Alabama Department of Corrections staff later concluded that Mr. Crosby had ingested drugs that caused him to fall off of his bunk and hit his head on the floor. Two separate ADOC investigations concluded that Captain McCorvey used excessive force in a violation of ADOC policy by striking Mr. Crosby once with a closed fist and a second time with an open hand, even though the ALJ, the Administrative Law Judge, wrote, Mr. Crosby did not pose a threat to McCorvey and never engaged in active resistance. And so the warden adventurous recommended Captain McCorvey's dismissal, citing the unnecessary and unwarranted force that was used against the inmate. And so the Alabama Department of Corrections terminated his employment on April the 4th. But the captain appealed his dismissal to the Alabama State Personnel Board, which adopted the administrative law judge's findings that his use of force was excessive and unnecessary since Crosby was handcuffed. But then the board, despite what the administrative law judge had determined, despite what the internal investigation by ADOC had determined, and despite the warden's recommendation for termination, the board reinstated Mr. McCorvey with full back pay, minus a 10-day suspension. Captain McCorvey remains employed by the Alabama Department of Correction. Mr. Crosby, on the other hand, is one of numerous incarcerated people who have died or suffered grievous injuries after assaults by officers at Ventress. On November the 30th, 2019, Sergeant Derek Simmons, Officer Juan Wingham, and other Ventress officers reportedly assaulted Michael Smith, who was hospitalized with bilateral skull fractures, internal brain bleeding, fractures to his nose and eye socket, and broken teeth. According to court records, prison staff told the responding paramedics that Mr. Smith sustained his head injuries by falling off of his top bunk. Mr. Smith died on December the 5th, 2019, and his death was ruled a homicide caused by blunt force head trauma. At that time, ADOC announced that it was investigating an alleged use of force and placed two officers on leave. It also agreed to pay private attorneys up to $1.2 million to defend it against a lawsuit filed by Mr. Smith's family. And in 2022, former Sergeant Simmons was charged with manslaughter in connection with Mr. Smith's death. In 2018, Ventress Sergeant Marquion Persons struck Daniel Beatty in the jaw while Mr. Beatty was handcuffed behind his back, and a nurse testified that the blow dislocated Mr. Beatty's jaw and left a bone fragment protruding from his gum. Sergeant Persons was dismissed and pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges. On August 4, 2010, a group of officers, including Lieutenant Michael Smith, used their batons, fists, and feet to beat Rokras Mack to death in the dormitory of Ventrist. After he was accused of locking or looking inappropriately at a female officer, Mr. Mack sustained fractures to his ribs, arms, legs, and skull during the attack. An autopsy concluded that he died as a result of multiple blunt force trauma. Multiple officers pled guilty in federal court to assaulting Mr. Mack and to obstruction of justice for covering up the assault. These examples of prison guards brutally attacking the people in their care are among dozens uncovered by federal investigators and detailed in a Justice Department report sent to Governor Kay Ivey in 2020. It said uses of force are so commonplace in Alabama's prisons that officers, even supervisors, watch other officers brutally beating prisoners and don't intervene. In short, in Alabama's prisons, cruel treatment of prisoners by staff is common. And even though Alabama has been on notice for years that it is violating the Constitution by failing to protect incarcerated people from excessive use of force by prison staff, ADOC has made no meaningful changes. And the toxic culture of unlawful violence by prison officers and supervisors continues unabated. At least 80 Alabama Department of Correction employees have been criminally charged or administratively sanctioned for misconduct within Alabama prisons since 2019. And even more troubling, in 30 of those cases, the offending officers were supervisors.
I bet you have been to Walmart at some time in your life and probably shopped there. I bet you even probably get groceries there from time to time. Did you know that Walmart has grocery pickup? And in fact, I can save you $15 on your first order of $50 or more. For more information, go to www.deuceconradshow.com and select promotions. There'll be a link there where you can sign up as a new customer, and again, you'll save $15 on that first order of $50 or more.
A corrections officer who worked at the Donaldson Correctional Facility in Bessemer, Alabama, died on November 10th, a day after she was exposed to mace when a fellow officer sprayed an incarcerated person like a cockroach, Alabama Political Reporter reports. Now, Officer Yashia Chapel suffered an asthma attack on November 9th when she inhaled saber red mace while on duty at Donaldson. Her mother, Betty Davidson, told APR. Now, Ms. Davidson said no one from the Alabama Department of Corrections had contacted her about her daughter's death. People incarcerated at Donaldson told her that the asthma attack forced her daughter to leave work on November the 9th. And the following day, Ms. Davidson said she received a call that her daughter had died at Walker Baptist Medical Center, where the doctor said it looked like Ms. Chapel had died as a result of an anaphylactic asthma attack. Ms. Davidson told APR that she wanted an autopsy done, but her daughter was embalmed without her permission before evidence about her cause of death could be obtained. Miss Chapel was the mother of a 5-year-old child and a 4-month-old infant, and her mother learned from her death certificate that she was pregnant. That mace didn't take one life, it took two lives, Miss Davidson told APR, and my daughter was pregnant. Miss Chapel was well loved by colleagues and incarcerated people, her mother told APR, adding that she is shocked that ADOC has said nothing to her about her daughter's death. She feels like ADOC is trying to sweep her daughter under the rug, according to APR. Now, APR also reported that ADOC had not responded to its reporters' inquiries. On December the 3rd, Alabama.com or Al.com reported that the Alabama Department of Corrections is denying that Ms. Chapel died after exposure to chemical spray. ADOC spokesperson Kelly Betts told Al.com there were no documented incidents of Ms. Chapel being directly exposed to chemical agents while at work.
Hey, Deuce Conrad here. I just want to tell you about Ibotta. Ibotta is one of the greatest things I have ever laid my eyes on. It's a great tool for actually earning money. And trust me, I've tried all these surveys and everything that the internet seems to say that you're going to make money, but nothing has made me money like Ibotta. In my first week of trying Ibotta, I earned approximately $40 just shopping. It's like coupon savings for people that don't like to clip coupons. Anyways, there is a link in the description of this podcast for you to become a partner with me in Ibotta. And when you submit your first receipt, you'll earn $10. That simple, that easy, just by going and shopping at places that you're already shopping, such as Walmart, Kroger, Publix. And it's easy to cash out as well. You can get gift cards to Amazon or have a direct payment made to you. Anyways, check the link down below. Use the referral code KAXRFWJ and earn $10 on your first receipt submitted.
Current and former inmates announced a lawsuit in December challenging Alabama's prison labor program as a type of modern-day slavery, saying that prisoners are forced to work for little pay, and that sometimes no pay at all, in jobs that benefit the government entities and even private corporations. The class action lawsuit also accuses the state of maintaining a discriminatory parole system with a low release rate that ensures a supply of laborers while also generating money for the state. The forced labor scheme that currently exists in the Alabama prison system is the modern reincarnation of the notorious convict leasing system that replaced slavery. After the Civil War, Janet Harold, the legal director of Justice Catalyst Law, said, "Now, the Department of Corrections and the Alabama Attorney General's Office declined to comment on the lawsuit. The lawsuit accuses the state of violating the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, anti-human trafficking laws, as well as the Alabama Constitution. The lawsuit contends that the state maintains a forced labor scheme that coerces inmates into work. The lawsuit said that those jobs include unpaid prison jobs where inmates perform tasks that help keep the facilities running. Inmates in work release might perform jobs where businesses pay minimum wage or more, but the prison system keeps 40% of the prisoner's gross pay to defray the cost of their incarceration. And then they also deduct fees for transportation and laundry services." The lawsuit referred to the state's 40% reduction as a labor trafficking fee. Now, LaKira Walker, who was previously incarcerated for 15 years, said that she worked unpaid jobs at the prison, including housekeeping and unloading trucks. She said she later worked on an inmate road crew for just $2 a day. And then a work release job working 12-hour shifts at a warehouse freezer for a food company, and she said that she and other inmates felt pressured to work even if they were sick. She said if you didn't work, you were at risk of going back to the prison or getting a disciplinary infraction. Almero English, a state inmate, said trustworthy prisoners perform unpaid tasks. They keep prisons running so that the prison administrators could dedicate their limited staff to other functions. Why would a slave master, by his own free will, release men on parole who aid and assist them in making their paid jobs easier and carefree, English said. Now, while the state did not comment, the state has maintained prison and work release jobs prepare inmates for life after the incarceration. Now, the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution ended slavery, but it still allows forced labor as punishment for a crime. And states set a variety of wages for inmate laborers, but most are low. A report for the American Civil Liberties Union research found that the average hourly wage for jobs inside prisons is just a mere 52 cents. The plaintiffs included two labor unions, and the lawsuit said that the supply of inmate labor puts downward pressure on wages for all workers and interferes with unions' ability to organize workers. These are but just a few of the disturbing examples of chaos in Alabama prisons.
Acorns is the leading micro-investing app in the United States. It's easy to use. Mobile-first technology makes it simple for anyone to set aside and invest life spare money. Acorns allows customers to automatically invest in a low-cost, diversified portfolio of exchange-traded funds offered by some of the world's top asset managers, including Vanguard and BlackRock. Customers grow their wealth in one of five portfolios constructed with help from world-renowned Nobel Laureate economist Dr. Harry Markowitz. Acorn's smart portfolio algorithms automatically work in the background of life, helping users build wealth naturally, pennies at a time. From acorns, mighty oaks do grow. Hey, I'm using Acorns, and I love how easy it is to save and invest for my future. Join me, and you'll get a free $5 investment. Go to www.deuceconradshow.com and select the promotions link, and from there, you can sign up directly with Acorns.
In January, as witnesses, including five news reporters, watched through a window, Kenneth Eugene Smith, who was convicted and sentenced to die in the 1988 murder-for-hire slaying of Elizabeth Sennett, convulsed on a journey as Alabama carried out the nation's first execution using nitrogen gas. Critics, including the United Nations, who had worried the new execution method would be cruel and experimental, said Smith's final moments Thursday night proved they were right. Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall, however, characterized it on Friday as a textbook execution. But here's what an eyewitness account of how it unfolded. Times, unless otherwise noted, are according to a clock on the execution chamber wall at the William C. Holman Correctional Facility. The curtains between the viewing room and the execution chamber opened at 7:53 p.m. Smith, wearing a tan prison uniform, was already strapped to the gurney and draped in a white sheet. A blue-rimmed respirator mask covered his face from forehead to chin. It had a clear face shield and plastic tubing that appeared to connect through an opening to the adjoining control room. The prison warden entered the chamber. He read the death warrant setting his execution date, and he held a microphone for Smith to speak any final words. "Tonight, Alabama causes humanity to take a step backward," Smith began. He moved his fingers to form an "I love you" sign to his family, who was also present. "I'm leaving you with love, peace, and light. Love all of you." The Sennett family watched from a viewing room that was separate from the one where members of the media and Smith's attorney were seated. Marshall, the attorney general, gave prison officials the okay to begin the execution at 7:56 p.m. That was the final confirmation from his office that there were no court orders preventing it from going forward. A corrections officer in the chamber approached Smith and checked the side of the mask. The Reverend Jeff Hood, Smith's spiritual advisor, took a few steps toward Smith, touched him on the leg, and appeared to pray. The Department of Corrections had required Hood to sign a waiver agreeing to stay 3 feet away from Smith's gas mask in case the hose supplying the nitrogen came loose. Smith began to shake and writhe violently in thrashing spasms and seizure-like movements at or about 7:58 p.m. The force of his movements caused the gurney to visibly move at least once. Smith's arms pulled against the straps holding him to the gurney. He lifted his head off the gurney and then fell back. The shaking went on for at least 2 minutes. Hood repeatedly made the sign of the cross towards Smith. Smith's wife, who was watching, cried out. Smith began to take a series of deep, gasping breaths, his chest rising noticeably. And at 8:08 p.m., his breathing was no longer visible. The corrections officer who had checked the mask before walked over to Smith and looked at him. The curtains were closed to the viewing room at about 8:15 p.m. Alabama Corrections Commissioner John Q. Hamm told reporters afterward that the nitrogen gas flowed for approximately 15 minutes. A day later, the state attorney general's office declined to discuss at what time the nitrogen gas began flowing, or at what time a monitor connected to Smith during the execution showed that his heart had stopped beating. State officials said that Smith was pronounced dead at 8:25 p.m. I have no doubt made money off of crimes, and it's the stories of crimes and murders and mayhem. It is what this podcast is about. I am a huge supporter of law and order. I support the death penalty. I support the cruelest of this world being imprisoned and punished within reason for their crimes. But the things that are happening in the state of Alabama concern me greatly. Because at what point in time does the good cross the line and become the evil? If the government is willing to deprive a human being, regardless of whether or not they're a convicted felon, of basic human rights, what are they willing to do to you as a law-abiding citizen? That's the big question here. Is how do we hold the government, the state of Alabama, accountable for its actions? Until next time, I'll see you then.